Welcome to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. I am your host, Hannah Davis, from Cookeville Regional Medical Center. And today, I have the privilege of having Dr. Vinu Kotla, oncologist at the Cancer Center at Cookeville Regional Medical Center, with us. And we are going to be discussing cancer prevention and steps and tips you can take to reduce your cancer risk. Welcome, Dr. Kotla.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you for the opportunity to spend some time today to talk about a very important topic. And my role in the community as a cancer physician, I've been here about 10 years. I grew up in India, did my medical school in New Delhi, and completed my residency and fellowship in oncology in New York, and moved to town in 2009. Have a family of two kids, 16 and 10.
Wow, that's awesome.
And a wife of 21 years who's our anchor and who's also passionate about other community activities and involved in nonprofits and, events like that.
That's great. So what brought you into the world of oncology?
So during the medical school, most of us are interested in some patient care related field. And when I came to the United States to further my training, my first exposure was to some research labs and there I saw some research that was being conducted that's probably we're seeing the fruits of that type of cutting-edge research. So I kind of early on saw what the science had in store for cancer treatments in general, and that definitely motivated the scientist in me. And then during residency, during my first rotation in a medical ward, the complexity of the cases challenged me. And also the depth of a patient-physician relationship you can form.
Absolutely.
That was the other aspect that motivated me to join oncology. And at the time, it was, because of those specific reasons, it was actually a field that was not chosen, and I chose to do the opposite.
Yeah, that's so funny. Well, that's great, though. Yet you're with that patient the whole journey, so it's very rewarding, I'm sure, in some aspects. So according to the research released by the American Cancer Society, nearly half of all cancer cases and deaths in the U.S. are preventable with lifestyle changes and early detections. So today we're going to kind of spend some time talking about six things we can do to help prevent cancer or at least catch it early. So Dr. Kotla, what is the first thing we can do to reduce our cancer risk?
I think, if you look at the statistics of the cancer incidence across the United States and even the world, we have about 1.8 million cases a year, and roughly 70% of them can be attributable to smoking related. And about 30% of the cancer deaths can be attributable to smoking in general.
So and smoking,
So that's why it's a big risk factor that is very addressable, and I think that's our biggest opportunity. So stopping smoking would be my first recommendation.
So do we know what smoking is doing to the body exactly? So maybe explain why it's such a big deal to stop smoking.
So I think most audience probably are aware of the controversial with the tobacco industry and the science of how smoking causes cancer, But generally, it's exposure to the carcinogens, during the smoking process that initiates the process, what we call a carcinogenesis. So it's a multi-step process, takes over multiple years, and often related to how much somebody smokes. And therefore, the smoking initiates the carcinogenesis, and there may be other environmental factors or diet, other issues that superimpose on this risk, and patients as a result have cancer as one of the health adverse effects from smoking. But we also know smoking raises inflammatory state in the body. It increases the cardiac risk. It increases the respiratory diseases. You see COPD, emphysema. So when you quantify the burden of health, poor health imposed on the society from smoking, that's also an additional opportunity that we have to realize. It's not just cancer prevention. In that context, quitting smoking is important, but it's also important from other health outcomes.
Health-related issues, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if someone is a smoker and they just can't kick that habit quite yet, what is your encouragement to them to stay on top of this to, per, you know, for potential cancer risk?
Right. I mean, smoking is, you know, definitely addictive. And, you know, first and foremost, I think the attitude of the physicians as well as the patients, they have to recognize that it's a disease, the addiction, and that they need somewhat of a structured help. But first thing is to kind of generate interest in a patient to quit or motivate them, and that can be done in different settings. But from a in a healthcare setting, the hospitals, most of the hospitals have opportunities for smokers to engage in structured counseling programs, nicotine replacement therapies, and so Cookwell, I believe, offers a Quit for Life smoking class, and that patients would be able to access once a week.
And would you say making sure that they're going to regular routines or getting, I mean, the lung cancer screening, I mean, there are things that they can also do if they're going to smoke, you know, that
right.
they can
so,
maybe.
Right. So, I mean, obviously we realize that there are patients that are, you know, going to find it hard, or they've smoked long enough that their risk of cancer the moment they stop is not going to go down to a minimal proportion. So those high-risk smokers and typically patients that have smoked that long or certain pack years or of a certain age maybe may qualify for a low-dose CT screens that have shown to be able to detect lung cancer at an early stage and help with you know survival.
You're listening to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. We are here with Dr. Kotla, oncologist at the Cancer Center at Cookeville Regional, and we are discussing cancer prevention, steps and tips you can take to reduce your cancer risk. So the next one we're going to talk about a little bit is preventing UV exposure. So talk to us a little bit about why, how do we prevent UV exposure? What does that look like?
Right. So ultraviolet radiation is part of a spectrum of our solar rays that has been proven to be carcinogenic, and majority of the cancer risk is on the skin cancers. And melanomas tends to be a you know big group of cancers that comes from that literature. And again, a very preventable opportunity. Melanoma, when you detect it early, it's very curable about 95% of the time, but if you detect it at an advanced stage, the cure rates are anywhere from 10 to 15%
wow.
at 5 years. So these diseases do give us a good understanding of what the risk factors are, so avoiding those risk factors, to me, is the first best step. And so there's a couple of ways, you know, UV exposure in general is prominent. One is outdoor activities. The other common phenomenon, which also needs to be talked about, is the use of tanning beds.
Mm.
So the solar exposure, you could prevent it with using a sunscreen. There are very appropriate guidelines of, you know, what SPF strength you need to be using. And whereas the tanning beds, I still feel that's as a phenomenon continues to increase, and often in younger age groups, and the age at which you get exposed to a tanning bed increases your risk by 85%. If you
wow.
get exposed to a tanning bed before age 18, your risk of skin cancer goes up by 85%.
So age before 18.
Right.
Which is, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, I remember, look, I'm pale as it comes, so tanning beds and I didn't get along very well, but I tried for a little bit and it just didn't work for me. I just would burn the whole
right.
time.
And, so and it's the usage is very common in the teens. So,
yes, so teens are definitely
right. So it's
doing
very
that.
Important for parents to talk to their teens, just like they would talk about drugs and sex education.
Absolutely.
About tanning use of tanning beds in the same token. And another interesting point to note, how this compares to the solar exposure. So 20 minutes of tanning bed is roughly equal to about 3 hours of being in the sun
wow.
without a sunscreen.
Yeah.
So
weigh your options there. I mean, yeah, that's crazy. Talk a little bit about, you know, we talked about not smoking. We talked about preventing UV exposures from tanning beds to just making sure you're using sunscreen. But the next tip is one that's getting a little more attention these days in the headline. It hasn't been a big thing, but it's come back. So getting the HPV vaccine, can we talk a little bit about what is HPV? Why is it serious? Why does the research, I mean, what does research show us about this vaccine?
So this is also a very well-recognized health problem, especially by the World Health Organization as one of the preventable diseases. HPV is... It stands for human papillomavirus, and most of us probably have heard of conditions like warts, whether orally or genitally, mucocutaneous locations, cervical cancer, anal cancers, head and neck cancers. These are all the different kinds of cancers human papillomavirus is known to predispose to, and it does... It is a form of a communicable disease because it's transmitted by sexual transmission. And the infection can linger and be latent for several decades before you actually notice.
I think that's why it's kind of scary because you could have been, I guess, sexually active in some way. And then years later, you find yourself like, what's going on?
Right.
Yeah.
So the human papillomavirus vaccine, the HPV vaccine, there are different commercially available options, and a lot of the pediatrics offices vaccinate in different age groups. And there's one called Gardasil 9, which has about the 9 strains of the virus, which almost account for about 90% of the cervical cancer cases. So it's gotten a lot of attention because of its ability to be preventive in some of these morbid illnesses.
Not everyone can just get this vaccine, though, right? I mean, there are qualifications. There's an age range.
So there's very well written guidelines by CDC and in American Academy of Pediatrics. So the typical age groups, boys or girls, both of them can receive the vaccine, ideally around age 11 or 12. And in cases of girls, it can be as early as 9. And there is also an aspect of catch-up vaccination that is approved up to ages 21 to 26. Ideally, you have to give this before exposure to the virus.
Right.
And the effectiveness is less if you get the vaccination after already you've been exposed to the papilloma, which is, in fact, the reason why, you have to get this at a young age. And if you decide to get it later on, the effectiveness may be questionable.
We'll continue our talk with Dr. Coat Law News Talk 94.1 right after this.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back. You're listening to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. I am your host, Hannah Davis, and with me is Dr. Vinu Kotla, oncologist at the Cancer Center at Cookeville Regional Medical Center. And we are discussing prevention for cancer and steps and tips you can take to reduce your cancer risk. And so far, the tips have been not smoking or stop smoking, prevent UV exposure. And we've been talking about the HPV vaccine, which we're going to talk a little bit more about before we jump into the next tip. So we talked about not everyone can get it, basically ages as early as 9 for girls, but ages 11 to about the age of 21. Is about when you can get this vaccine. It's the human papillomavirus vaccine, and it's for sexually transmitted disease. It's an STD-based vaccine, and it prevents cancer. And we find out later on a little bit more about sometimes you get exposed to it, you don't know for years or maybe even a decade later. So What is your encouragement to parents who have kids eligible for the vaccine? I mean, you said that maybe pediatric offices are encouraging right. it.
I think the first step is, you know, conversation with their providers, whether it's appropriate for their child. But in general, from a medical standpoint, these have been proven to be safe. There's no major adverse effects one needs to be afraid of. And these are reimbursed by insurance companies. But the biggest, you know, benefit to an individual is the reduced risk of the HPV transmission and thereby your reduced risk of cancer, especially the cervical cancer and other difficult to treat cancers. And there's some important statistics that might help a parent understand. So hypothetically, if you were to vaccinate all 12-year-old girls in the United States, you're able to prevent about 20,000 HPV infections and about 3,300 cases of cervical cancer.
I mean, when you look at it that way, that's that's amazing. Yeah. So the encouragement is just to have those conversations with your doctor, talk to your kids through that and everything. Right. And so, yeah, that's great and something definitely in the media and talked about. So we have a fourth tip. What do you have for us, Dr. Kotla?
I think the cancer screening, which is what most of us here in the media and the doctor's offices, there are imaging tests, there are labs or other types of exams that may be vital to detect cancer either in its early stages or in a precancerous stage where early treatment or detection is likely to improve your outcomes. So these have been established over the years by population-based studies, proven to be cost-effective, safe, and provide the needed benefit. So there are particular examples of mammogram, colonoscopy, a pap smear, routine skin exam. So these come to my mind as we talk about, and even the lung cancer, the low-dose CT screen could be put into that, but that really applies to a narrow subset of the patients. But the above mammogram, a colonoscopy, pap smear, and a skin exam. So these would be your age-appropriate screening tests. And in men, prostate cancer can also be put into that category.
So why is it important to get these screenings?
So screening, by nature of these tests, you're able to detect a cancer early where you're likely to get curative treatments, and therefore your survival statistics are much better. Other benefit from screening tests is that you sometimes can be able to pick a precancerous lesion, and treatments for those are a lot less cumbersome or intense, and sometimes maybe even non-surgical, and therefore addressing that precancerous situation itself could be thought of as a cancer prevention.
Absolutely.
And so I think screening does give huge opportunities to have a very good survival.
Dr. Kotla, I agree with you. Screenings are important, but there are stubborn people out there and they just don't have the time, or maybe, you know, they don't want to go and be screened. What is your advice to them?
I think, you know, so the issue if you look at the average screen rates for all these age appropriate screening tests that all the different organizations endorse and all the physicians agree, the screen rates can be ranging anywhere from 30% to 75% across the board on all the tests I've mentioned before. So there's clearly an unmet need for making sure the screening is more universal, almost like your vaccinations. But typically, I think the reason the barriers to screening, you know, it could be insurance, it could be, you know, work issues, it could be different things. So I think as a community, the hospitals and the public health organizations should do more to make these as mass screening events sometimes to capture those patients that would not be getting their screenings. But the biggest motivation is to see what the other side of screening does for you. And being an oncologist, I could share examples of patients that would not have had a mammogram and are found to have a stage 4 breast cancer 4 years later. And the toll it takes on the family, the community, and the nation as a whole. And these are economic wrecks that one needs to avoid by just going through age-appropriate screening tests.
So finding, you know, going regularly for, I mean, whether it's your primary care doctor or it could be a specialist you're seeing, but if there is something different, letting them know, as well as these health screens, health fairs, there's different things in the community that offer, you know, these opportunities for people to be screened. And yeah, I mean, there have been several stories I've heard of myself, and I can't imagine you see a different side of just where if, you know, some people do get to catch it early, and then some people will go and they're like, oh, I mean, because there is, it can be kind of scary to find out that something's wrong, but better to catch it early.
That's true.
Than to.
So I think the role that you have to engage with your doctor, I think that's, I would like to, you know, just to share a few thoughts on that. What a patient, when they are meeting their providers for their annual checkups, they're getting their, you know, A1Cs checked, lipid panels checked, they were, you know, blood pressures checked. But I think, you know, a couple of other things that they should include in their routine encounters with their physicians is to ask about these cancer risk assessments and, you know, understand what their risk factors are, understand what the screening tests available that are appropriate for their age. Also talk about, you know, other healthy lifestyles, diet and such. So it should be a partnership with your physician rather than waiting for a physician to tell you you're 50, therefore you should go for a colonoscopy.
Right.
And I think that conversation should have happened a long time before that.
You're listening to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. We are here with Dr. Kola, oncologist at the Cancer Center at Cookeville Regional Medical Center, and we are discussing cancer prevention, steps and tips you can take to reduce your cancer risk. The next tip comes as no surprise, and it's watch your diet. So why is watching your diet so important to reduce cancer risk?
I think it's you see all the TV commercials about these healthy diet plans and people willing to pay to eat healthy. But diet in terms of cancer prevention is also extremely important, and it's probably one of the, you know, easily modifiable risks. Healthy diet, in my belief, it doesn't have to be a complex meal plan, just a very thoughtful accumulation of what goes into your plate. You know, there is a term that different organizations have coined called building a healthy plate. So basically, with about 2/3 greens and not more than 1/3 of meat, mostly plant-based diet, avoiding red meat, using, you know, greens, antioxidants. So these are all different tips in terms of diet that has been shown to be, you know, beneficial for cancer risk. So, for example, breast cancer, high-fat diet has been correlated with you know, breast cancer risk. Same thing with ovarian cancer. High-fat diet has been correlated with ovarian risk. Excess red meat consumption has been linked to colon cancer. So I think these are all different opportunities we have.
And so we see that obesity does play a role maybe in cancer a little bit. So watching your diet, helping and staying healthy.
Right. So obesity, you know, it can be diet-originated, or sometimes there is a lot of complex interplay of genetic, biochemical, hormonal imbalances.
Right.
So but the obesity in general is a state that does promote carcinogenesis by way of the chemical changes that it causes in the body. It manipulates the hormonal imbalance. So sometimes that may be favoring the cancer, you know, initiation. And especially obesity might come in the way of physical activity or a healthy diet. And so in a way, it's a complex interplay of obesity with other risk factors that is causing the cancer risk.
Well, we're rounding out the last little bit. So, Dr. Kola, what is our last tip for reducing your cancer risk?
So the other cancer prevention risk, and again, this may not apply to everybody across the board, but it's still an important risk that we need to detect. And so it's a hepatitis C, and recognizing who's the patient population that needs to be tested.
Yeah.
And not a very common knowledge, even though CDC has put out guidelines. So typically anybody that's, high risk, or which it means either they've had a high risk sexual behavior or, IV drug use or have had a blood transfusion in the 1990s, or in general, a baby boomer, somebody that's born between 1945 to 1965.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us. From all of us here at News Talk 94.1, we thank you for listening in. And thank you, Dr. Cola, again for being with us and giving us valuable information on ways that we can help reduce cancer risk. This is Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. I am your host, Hannah Davis, and we will see you here next Thursday.